Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bovakama Daf Ayin Beis. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara Marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage, and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 4 lines from the top of Daf Ayin Beis. We open with a quote from the Mishnah, Hashochet v'nimtzeis trefa. And the Mishnah goes on to say, Hashochet chulin ba'azora mishalim tashlumei dalet vehei. That one who slaughters a common animal, chulin, a mundane, unsanctified animal, in the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash, that results in the thief who stole a common animal, brought it into the Beis HaMikdash courtyard, he has to pay for the slaughtering, the additional multiple payment, resulting in a total payment of 4-5. The topic heading that we have on the side of our Gemara, we include a topic heading where possible. We entitle it the Nosei, and in this case we combine it with a structural note, and we call this the Mivneh. The note on the side emphasizes Roman numerals 1 and then 2. When you look at your Gemara text, you'll notice these numbers on the side of the text, where 1 appears immediately and 2 will appear 4 lines from the bottom. The general issues dealt with in these two versions, we'll have 2 lishonos, binyan shchita, regarding how to look at shchita in halachic terms. Is it yeshna mitchila v'yad sof, o eino elo libesof? And we'll see, part of our discussion will involve chulin ba'azora. Eich nie chayev betashlumen. So let's go over some of these points before we get into the Gemara itself, so that when we're working with the text, we'll be familiar with these concepts. Yeshna means there is, regarding shchita, slaughtering. Slaughtering is evaluated as an act of slaughtering. Mitchila v'yatsof means from the very beginning, when you start making the incision in the animal's neck for the slaughtering, it is viewed in our, let's say, through a halachic perspective as the beginning of shchita from the initial incision. Let us point out that, of course, for an animal to be allowed to be eaten after slaughtering, you have to slaughter more than half of the main simonim. They're referred to as the tubes, the trachea and esophagus, the kona and veshet in Hebrew. Kona is the trachea and veshet, the esophagus. So for in one to be able to eat from the animal, the majority has to be sliced open. However, there's a school of thought that says we evaluate the action of shchita from the very beginning. There's another school of thought that says eino elo lebesof, which means only at the point that you reach the majority, that you're slicing the simonim, the tubes, from the, we'll say, the 50% mark beyond. In other words, you're just at the very end of halachic shchita. Only at that point do we label what you're doing as shchita. Up till that point, you're simply slicing meat as far as we're concerned. You're not involved with the act, the formal act of shchita. This analysis, I'm sure, sounds a bit abstract. Once again, do we label the action you're doing from the very beginning, from the very first incision that you make in the animal's neck, or from the very last point in time when you are reaching the majority point? Hopefully, through learning the Gemara, we'll be able to appreciate a little more the applicable say the relevance of this analysis. The second topic dealt with Chulin Ba'azorah, slaughtering unsanctified animals in the Beis HaMikdash courtyard. The Mishnah says that that results in a person, the thief, that is, who stole the animal, then slaughtered it in the Beis HaMikdash courtyard, is paying the multiple payment, the 4 or 5. You'll see in the Gemara, we have to figure out how in fact does the thief incur this culpability with regard to slaughtering the chulin in the Azoro. You'll ask, well, why not? Isn't it obvious that he stole and slaughtered an animal? Well, the fact that you slaughtered in the Beis HaMikdash courtyard might pose, we'll say, a question on that matter. Now, here we have, I included in our note, the presentation of question of Lashon 1. The Lashon 1, I've written, said, "B'tchilas ha-Gemara mevusas al din ha-Mishnah." The Gemara opens up based on the stated din of the Mishnah, "B'inyin ha-Sheichit Chulin Ba'azorah," regarding the halacha of the Mishnah, that slaughtering Chulin Ba'azorah results in the payment of 4 or 5. The Alzeh Rabbi Chavivi Michizno, and on that you'll see Rabbi Chavivi from Chozno Menase Lahasik Maskonis attempts to achieve reach conclusions Legabi Shchita the Eino Elo Lebesof, that the way we classify or label slaughtering is only at the very last point, the point at which the majority of the tubes are cut open. But that's so, okay, structurally, the Gemara opens up with the din of the Mishnah, and then from the din of the Mishnah, Rabbi Chavivi tries to draw conclusions regarding how do we evaluate Shechita. In Lashon number 2, the opposite takes place. In Lashon number 2, the first, second version of the Gemara that we said starts 4 lines from the bottom, in our note we've written, HaGemara Poisachas B'shtei Deus B'inyin Shechita. The Gemara will open up with 2 opinions. You have Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yochanan are arguing regarding Shechita. Is it Mitchila V'Atzof or is it Eino Elo V'Sof? So we open up stating the two ways of analyzing Shechita. And Rabbi Chavivi, Ubehemshech, in the continuation of the Gemara, Rabbi Chavivi from Chizno, Menase Lahasik Maskona Binyan Chulin Ba'azorah, using the din of Rabbi Yochanan as a jump-off point, that given using Rabbi Yochanan as a given that Yeshna L'Shchita Mitchilat Sof, let us draw conclusions regarding Chulin Ba'azora. You notice then the opposite approaches of the two Lashonas. First Lashon opens up with Chulin Ba'azora and then goes and then lapses into the issue of Shechita the Basof. And the second Lashon opens up with the issue of Shechita, Yeshna L'Shechita Mitchilat Sof, and then lapses into Chulin Ba'azorah. Later in the Gemara, we're going to have a topic heading that reads, Chulin Ba'azorah, is that a Torah-level offense or a rabbinic prohibition? But Mirtz Hashem will get to that a bit later. So now we open up our Gemara, Omerlei Rav Chavivi Mechoizno L'Ravashi. I should point out also, within the Gemara, the names are underlined. You'll see the names, there's a lot of underlining, relatively speaking. In the two Lashonos of Gemara, the same names will appear throughout the discussion. So beware of that already at the outset. There might be a slight variation on that, but you'll see, primarily speaking, the same names appearing. So that in Lashon 1, Rav Chavivi Michozna addresses Rav Ashi, and in Lashon number 2, you'll see the second line from the bottom, Rav Chavivi Michozna addresses Rav Ashi. And the names that appear later, you'll see also some repetition. There's also some difference, but you'll notice that later. So Rav Chavivi Michozno says to Rav Ashi in our first Lashon, first version, should we conclude from the fact that it says in the Mishnah, Hashoichit Chulin Ba'azorah is Chayav, from the fact that Mishnah says that slaughtering the Chulin Azor results in the payment of 4 or 5, Eino l'shchita ela l'besof. That shchita, which in our topic of theft, is referred to by the Torah using the word utavochoi. It's important to be familiar with that. Shchita, slaughtering, in the Torah is referred to as utavocho. So from the fact that the thief is going to pay 4 or 5 for slaughtering in the Azorah, that eino l'shchita ela besof, that shchita is viewed only as the action done at the last moment, at the 50 to 51% mark. Now we look at the Rashi, second narrow line, eino l'shchita ela besof, hilkoch, therefore, kol kama de tovach, as he started the slaughtering from the, and with eino l'shchita besof means while when he, that we considers the act of slaughtering as slaughtering only at the last moment. Therefore, everything that he was doing up till that point, everything that he was doing is demore kotovach. It wasn't chulin bazora. It wasn't considered slaughtering chulin bazora. It was considered cutting in the neck of the owner. The owner, that means the animal, while still owned by the owner. Uvigemar shchita hu demitzer banon. Only at the last moment does it become forbidden to benefit from, as is the halacha regarding shchita bazora, animals slaughtered in the temple courtyard. Let's continue now in the Gemara. De'i yeshna l'shchita mitchila v'yatsof, for if you would say that formal shchita is evaluated from the very beginning, so that formal shchita from the very beginning, in this case, would be the slaughtering of chulin bazora, the prohibition of slaughtering of shochet, and I use the word shochet deliberately, the prohibition of shochet, of slaughtering the common in the holy temple courtyard. If that were so, that we start labeling it from the beginning, kevan de shochad b'purta osra. Well, the first incision that you make would be considered an act of slaughtering, and even that little bit, it will make it prohibited b'hanah. The animal becomes osir b'hanah. Idoch, the balance of the slaughtering, the rest of it, lo demore kotovach, you're not slaughtering the owner's animal anymore. The Gemara responds and says, "Omar le Rav Huna brei de Rava." I will tell you in general that there is shchita mitchila v'yatsof. And as far as the Mishnah is concerned, ki ka mechayev, the obligation of the 4 or 5, ahu purta, is for that very little initial incision. At that point, it's still the owner's, and you're slaughtering his animal. And for that little first incision, you become chayev for the multiple payments for slaughtering. Omale Rav Ashi. Rav Ashi, whose name, by the way, we saw at the beginning of the discussion, he says to Rav Huna, lo tidchi, don't try to push off Rav Chavivi's analysis by claiming that you can actually say yeshno mitchil itself, because and the penalty is for that little first incision. Utvachoi kulo bo'inon v'leka. The Torah says that the thief is chayef to pay multiple payments for slaughtering if he does a complete slaughtering, not an initial incision in the neck. So the Torah does not anticipate charging the thief 4 or 5 for an initial little incision in the neck. Well then, elo kashya, that means, should we then go back to what Rav Chavivi was trying to say, should we then conclude with conclusively that eino l'shchita ela b'sof, that shchita is evaluated only by that last moment where you are concluding the shchita, the last moment where you're going from the 50% mark to the 51% mark of cutting the simonim, which makes it a good shechita? Should we conclude that? Omar le, hachi Omar Rav Gamda Mishmei Derova. Here we say we're not going to come to that conclusion that shechita is necessarily from beginning to end, but rather that shechita is only at the end. We're not going to necessarily conclude that. So how can you have a situation that from the beginning you're slaughtering the owner's animal, and at the same time have it considered chulin bazora, which is forbidden to benefit from, and still have an obligation of paying 4 or 5. So Rav Gamda says, the following is said in the name of Rav Gamda, who quotes Rava, Kegoin sheshochat miksa simona bachutz. You started the slaughtering outside when it was still a regular chulin animal and owned by the owner. No prohibition to benefit from at this point yet. The gomron, and then finished, you went that 50% to 51% mark, bifnim, in the azora. So what have we created here? We've created a possibility of saying that shechita is from the very beginning, but we're not imposing the penalty of 4 or 5 on that initial slice. We want a complete shechita. Complete shechita means 51% is cut. So you did up till 50% outside the temple courtyard. We can say at that point it still belongs to the owner. And then the last moment you found yourself in the temple courtyard. You just have to, you're not allowed to pause in the middle of shechita in order for it to be an active shechita. So just imagine him on some kind of cart on a platform with wheels, and he starts the shechita while being rolled into the temple courtyard, so that the 50% is done outside the temple courtyard, and that last moment he's rolled into the temple courtyard without pausing in the slaughtering, goes over the 50% mark, completes in the temple courtyard, and that's called chulin ba'azora. Prior to the 51% mark, it's not called an act of shechita of chulin ba'azora yet. Iko demasni law aha. There are those that teach the above discussion on the following. Omer Shimon Mishum the Rabbi Levi Saba, Eino l'shchita ella l'besof. This opinion says, like we've seen before, that shchita is not called shchita until the very end. Rashi says, Eino l'shchita. Rashi, halfway down the narrow lines, Eino l'shchita, Ein shchita nikreis ella l'besof. The act of the slicing is not labeled by the term shchita until the very end. The nafkamina, the practical application of this analysis, is le'inyan amachashiv b'kotshim chutzlim koymen or chutzlizmanam. A person is forbidden to have improper thoughts concerning the slaughtering of sacrifices, thoughts that would involve eating the meat of the sacrifice outside their correct precinct, or processing it beyond the legislated time. Or having thoughts, improper thoughts regarding the identity of the sacrifice you're dealing with. If you say that Eino l'shchita b'sof, the wrongful thought that disqualifies the sacrifice would be a problem only if you're thinking that at that last moment. Not if you let us say, as soon as you start slicing, you have thoughts that the sacrifice you're dealing with is a different kind of sacrifice and has a different identity. If you're processing an ola and you think it to be a chatas, that would be a wrong identity thought that wouldn't be of consequence if you thought that only at the very beginning. You'd have to think that at the end of the Shechita. If, however, you say Yeshno l'shchita mitchila v'yatsof, so then that wrongful thought will have meaning from the very initial slice, because we're considering it an act of slaughter from the very beginning. So we've presented Rav Levi Saba's opinion that says Eino l'shchita b'sof, and we continue in our Gemara. Rav Yochanan holds Yeshno l'shchita mitchila v'yatsof, and as we just mentioned, if you even regarding improper thoughts regarding sacrifices, they would have relevance even from the very beginning of the cutting act. Omar le Rav Chavivi Michizno le Rav Ashi lema kosover Rav Yochanan chulin shenishchitu ba'azor alav del raisa. Let us say within the opinion of Rav Yochanan that the prohibition of benefiting from meat that's been mundane meat slaughtered in the temple courtyard is not a Torah concept. There may very well be the prohibition of benefiting from the meat, but not from a Torah standpoint. From a Torah standpoint, it's regular common meat. Nothing has happened to it in terms of status alteration. Why do we want to say that within the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan? We continue at the top of Omid Beis. The Isakadaitech deiraisa. If you think that chulin bazora and its resultant prohibition of benefit is a Torah level issue, and you're holding like Rabbi Yochanan, mechishachit la purta asra. When you make the initial incision, the porta means a little bit, that's the beginning of the shechita, you have prohibited to benefit from it. You've made it osur b'hana. Idach, the continuation of the slaughtering, lav demora kotovach, you're not slaughtering an owned animal, you're not slaughtering the owner's animal anymore. Once you label it as prohibited from benefit, it's not considered his. Why would the thief be obligated to pay, as it says in the Mishnah 4:5? Amale Rav Acha Brei de Rava. Now here you have a slightly different version by what between the two Lashonos of the Gemara. Here Rav Acha, the son of Rava, whereas in the first Lashon it was Rav Huna Brei de Rava. Making this point. What's the point? He called Mechayev Nami Ahu Purta. Really, there is an Isur of Chulin Vazora that is Torah based. However, the prohibition, the obligation of paying 4:5 is for that very initial incision that's made. Omale Rav Ashi. Rav Ashi, like we saw in the first Lashon, lo tidche. Rav Ashi says to Rav Acha, don't try to push off to reject what Rav Chavivi is trying to conclude with saying that the penalty of 4:5 is only for that very first little beginning act. Why? Utvachai, the Torah, when it obligates the thief for 4:5, it says utvacho kulo bo'inon v'leka. It's an obligation for a complete act of shechita belonging to the owner. And according to what you're saying, is that the Torah is mechayev only for the first slice, which is not a complete act of shechita. It may very well be the beginning of shechita, but it's not a fulfillment of utvacho. Well then, if you're not going to accept what Rav Acha is saying, Elokashia, then should we conclude that Rabbi Yochanan holds that Chulin Bazara is not Do'oraisa? Rabbi Yochanan, who says, Yeshna l'shchita mitchil v'atzof, we'd have to conclude that the prohibition of Chulin Bazara is purely rabbinic. From the Torah standpoint, you're slaughtering someone's animal, and the slaughtering is evaluated from beginning till the end. And as far as Utuvacho is concerned, you're doing a complete act of shechita belonging of, on an animal belonging to somebody. Omalei, so he says, Hochi Omar Rav Gamdo Mishmei de Rava, same name as we had in the first version. Kiko Mechayev, the Mishnah that speaks about Chulin Bazora resulting in the 4-5 payment. I'll tell you that Shechita is from the beginning. However, Kigoin Shishochat Mixes Simona Bachutz, he slaughtered part of, up to 50% of the Simona of those tubes outside the temple courtyard. The Gomron Bifnim, and the completion of them, the last 51% mark, that was done in the temple courtyard, so that you have Tvachoi Kulo before it becomes Osir Bahanoah. And therefore, you can tell me that Chulin Bazora is really Osir Min HaTorah. Ah, so then why is there a 4-5 payment if you hold Yeshna L'Tchita Mitchila V'Yatsof? Because of we can impose the 4-5 because of these circumstances. And now the Mishnah. Before we begin the new Mishnah, we have a topic heading, the Nosei, on the side of our marked Gemaras, which reads Edim, witnesses, Shenimtsu Zoimimim, that are found to be Edim Zoimimim, which we'll explain momentarily. In the context of our subjects of theft of an animal and its subsequent slaughter or selling. Edim Zomimim, if you're fairly new to Gemara learning, is a reference to a specific type of false testimony. Generally speaking, when witnesses appear, you need a minimum of two witnesses to serve as Torah-sanctioned testimony, and the two witnesses give us information. Two other witnesses may show up and contradict what the first two are saying, and that would be called Edus Hakosha, contradictory testimony, and we would reject all the witnesses. To speak in simplistic terms, would throw out all of their testimony. There's a unique situation in halacha that addresses a situation where after two witnesses testified about a certain matter, two other witnesses, and we speak of two, we mean a minimum of two, but two other witnesses appear and say, regarding the testimony of the first two, they say, how can you have testified about such and such an event on such and such a day, a date, when you were with us at that time somewhere else? So you couldn't have possibly seen and hence testify about an event when you were at a different place. At that time, you were with us at a different place. Imonu in Hebrew, Imonu Yisun b'mokom ploni. You were with us in a different place at that time. So in Edim Zoimimim, the second witnesses aren't challenging the veracity of the information, but they are challenging the ability of those witnesses to have provided that information. Therefore, according to the Torah, the first witnesses are rejected. We believe the second witnesses. And I emphasize, the second witnesses are not contradicting the information. They're simply contesting the ability of those first witnesses to say what they did. So those first witnesses, as far as we are concerned, are liars. And their penalty, their punishment, is in fact that which they were attempting to impose on the defendant. So if the first two witnesses spoke about Mr. X, we saw you borrow $100 on February 1st, they were in effect trying to make Mr. X obligated to pay $100 to the lender. Now that we've revealed that those first witnesses were somewhere else at that time when the loan was being extended, they couldn't have possibly seen Mr. X borrow the money. So we say to those witnesses, you were trying to obligate Mr. X in a debt of $100. You pay Mr. X $100. You were trying to cause him a loss of that money. You must compensate him. You are to be punished in what you were trying to impose on the defendant. That's Edim Zomimim in a nutshell. There are many pages of Gemara in the Shas dedicated to the topic of Edim Zomimim, and Amir Tzashem, we're going to see quite a bit of discussion from this point up till Daf Ayin Dalid regarding that topic. Now, let's read the Mishnah. Gonav apishnayim, a thief stole an animal based on the testimony of two, v'tovach u'mochar al pihen, and the slaughtering or selling of the animal was through their testimony. In other words, the witnesses that testified about the theft, also they continued testimony concerning the thief's slaughtering or selling of that animal. And then v'nimtzu zomimim, they turned out to be false witnesses in the zomimim sense. They were with other people somewhere else at the time that they claimed the theft and slaughtering to have taken place. So what happens to those witnesses? Mishalman HaKol, they have to pay the individual that they were trying to indict, they have to pay him the entire amount, the entire four times or five times the value of the animal they had been testifying about. Gonav Alpi Shnayim. The theft was testified by two witnesses, two specific witnesses, and two other witnesses testified about the subsequent slaughtering or sale. If both sets of witnesses are found to be zomimim, the first two shall pay double to the defendant. They were trying to impose a double payment for Geneva on that particular individual, so they must pay him the kefel. And the second set of witnesses that were also found to be false, who claimed that the defendant had slaughtered the animal, and if we'll talk about, let's say, slaughtering the ox slaughtering would result in an additional three times. If you add the kefel, which is two times, and the three just mentioned, you get five. We mention often the payment of four or five. Four in the case of a sheep theft, five in the case of an ox theft. So the second set of witnesses have to cover the amount that the slaughtering is responsible for, namely an additional three times. Nimtzu achreinim zomimim, let us say that only the second set of witnesses were found to be false. The first set of witnesses, honest, they testified about a theft of an animal. So, their testimony is accepted, and the defendant has to pay kefel. Who mishalem teshlame kefel? Who is the initial defendant? He pays the two times. But the information concerning the slaughtering, well, that's from false witnesses. V'hein mishalman tashlume gimel, they will have to pay the additional three times for the false testimony they said concerning the defendants having slaughtered the ox. So they pay that defendant three times. Echad min achreinim zemimim, let us say, one of the two second set of witnesses, those witnesses that came to testify about the slaughtering. We didn't mention in our introductory remarks, but when we want to impose the punishment of Edim Zomamim, namely Kasher Zomam, that's the expression you see in the Torah, what they wanted to do, they now have to, they have to suffer, they have to pay. That's true only when the both of them have been found to be false in that fashion. This is now a case where only one of the last two was found to be false. Echad min ha'achroinim zamimim, batla edus shnia. The testimony concerning the slaughtering is void. We don't impose the punishment that we mentioned because only one of them was found to be false. On the other hand, one witness about the slaughter is not enough to impose penalties. We need to have a minimum of two honest witnesses. So, in this case, where one of the witnesses concerning the slaughtering was found to be zomem, false, so the information of the slaughtering is rejected. But, according to this particular scenario, the witnesses that had testified about the initial theft, neither one of them was found to be false, so their testimony stands. Echad min ha'rishonim zomemim, let us say that one of the first two witnesses, the witnesses of theft, were found to be false, so that if you throw that out, then there's no testimony of theft. What are you left with? You're left with witnesses that said that the defendant slaughtered an animal. He might have been slaughtering his own animal. There's no guilt in merely slaughtering an animal. The guilt sets in when you're slaughtering a stolen animal. But now, in this particular scenario, one of the first two witnesses concerning the theft has been found to be false. We have no information then about a theft. So if Echad min Rishonim Zomemim, Botla Kol HaEdus, the entire testimony is thrown out, meaning regarding imposing penalties, none. Shimein Geneva, if we have no evidence of, we have no testimony concerning theft, Ein Tvicha Vein Mechira. The subsequent information regarding Tvicha Mechira has no legal relevance in terms of imposing penalties. The Gemara opens up with a discussion, in fact, the machlokus between Abaye and Rava. On the side of the Gemara, we have a nosei / mivne heading. The double underline highlights Abaye and Rava. This sugya represents one of the famous six cases where we will rule like Abaye over Rava, contrary to standard legal practice throughout the Shas, where we would rule like Rava over Abaye. This is one of the six that have the famous, I don't know if we call it an acronym or abbreviation that is applied, Ya'el Kigam. And the six cases are represented, each one by a separate letter. This abbreviation will appear on Omid Bey's, about eight lines from the top of, that is Ayin Gimel Omid Aleph, correction there, Ayin Gimel Omid Aleph, and the Ayin of that abbreviation, Ayin Eid Zomeim, regarding the following. So let's read our note on the side, where we indicate there's a machlokas Abaye and Rava, Eid Zomeim, the Mafreya Nifsal, Oy Mikan Ulahaba. Do we say that the false witness is said to be disqualified as a kosher witness, lemafreya means retroactively, back to the time of his initial testimony? There might very well be a significant gap in time between initial testimony and the discovery through the appearance of two additional witnesses that the original fellows were false. So when we speak about an aid zomein, we'll say a lying witness, he's labeled as a false, unacceptable, disqualified witness. From what point in time? The mafreya would mean retroactively, back to the point in time that he said his initial testimony, i.e. his initial lie, from that point onwards, he's a liar. Or do we say that he's labeled a false witness only at the point in time that it's revealed that he's false? The Gemara will present what we call nafka minas. You'll ask, what difference does it make? Well, one basic or simple nafka mina is, imagine this false witness, person who's discovered to be false, or we call him a liar, participated in subsequent testimonies after the initial testimony. He signed documents. There are different types of documents that require witnesses signing them. And the document and whatever it represents will be disqualified if the witnesses signing them are unfit. What is the status of documents that they may have signed or testimonies they may have offered between the initial testimony that we're featuring here and the point in time in which their falseness is revealed? If you say limafreya, retroactively, then believe it or not, all documents that they signed since the original testimony would be rejected. They might have participated in a lot of commercial transactions that require testimony. All those commercial transactions will be rejected. You'll have situations of no testimony anymore. If, however, you say mikanu laba, so we will overlook anything that they may have testified about from that point until now. We'll overlook. We say okay. Their disqualification is only from the point of their being revealed as such. So now the Gemara. And do note that there are two Lishonos. That's why you see Roman numerals 1 and 2, which on the side we indicate Shnei Lishonos Bahavonas Shitas Rava. Within Rava, there'll be two ways of understanding his point of view. The Gemara. Itmar, Eid Zomein, the false witness. And again, false in the context of Zomein. Abaye Omar Lemafreya Hu Nifsal. He is viewed as false retroactively from the time of his initial testimony. And Rava Omar Mikan Ulhaba Hu Nifsal. Only from the point in time that it's revealed that he testified falsely. And now we go over the opinions. Abaye Omar Lemafreya Hu Nifsal. He is considered disqualified as an acceptable witness from the initial testimony concerning which he's was said to be false. Why lemafreya do we say retroactively from that point in time onwards he's disqualified? Simply because mehu shaita de asid havelei rosha, from that point that he testified, asid means he said testimony. That he lied in his testimony. He's a wicked man. He's a rasha. Vatoira Omra, and the Torah says, Al Toshes Rasha Eid. Do not place in the position of testimony someone who is wicked, someone who is willing to lie. Rav Omar, Mikan Ulahaba Hu Nifsal. Only from the point of the revelation of his being a liar is he rejected. Eid Zomein Chidushu. This topic of false testimony through Zmama, through Zomein. Zomein, again, I know that we sometimes sound repetitious, but we got to emphasize. He's found false through the testimony of two second witnesses that say, you couldn't have testified about that because you were with us at a different time. That is a chiddush. What's the chiddush? What's the novelty over here? The ha-treu treininu. It's two against two. You've got your original witnesses and two others that are challenging the original guy's testimony. It's two against two. My chazis de tzayis lahani, tzayis lahani. Why do you choose to listen to the second two? Why not accept the first two? And I mentioned in our quite a while ago in today's shir, there's called something called edus b'hakosha, when you have contradictory witness testimony. In fact, we don't listen to this set over the other. We throw them all out. Here, we're opting to accept the second witnesses over the first witnesses. What is the reason for that? So we're not gonna here offer a reason, but we're gonna simply say the Torah tells me to do thusly. The Torah tells me to operate, to rule thusly. That's called a chiddush. It's something novel. Hilkach ein lechaboy elo mishas chiddush veilech. Therefore, you can't extend the problem of their falseness. Be backwards in time. You can't extend their rejection other from the time of their revelation onwards. They're being revealed as false. That's Mishas Chidush Veilech, literally from the time of the novelty, but it means their exposure as false. From only that point onwards can you declare them to be false. And declare them as disqualified. Ika di Amri, Rova Nami Kaba. Ika di Amri, a second, there are those that say, this is our second version. Rova also in principle holds like Abaye. Kabaye Svirole. Di Omar le Mafreyahu Nifsal. In principle, they are to be disqualified retroactively from the point in time that they lied. If I may say, that certainly is that would be the logical approach, that they're willing to lie under testimony from the point they initially spoke up, because now we know with the appearance of the second set of witnesses that these first guys were liars from that early point in time when they said their initial testimony. So why does Rava say mikan ulahaboho nifsal? The Hacha Hainu Taime de Rava. Here, this is the reason for Rava that says that their disqualification is only from this point onwards. We continue at the top of Daf Ayin Gimel. Mishum Pseida de Lekuchos. Because of the otherwise loss that would be sustained by all purchasers who had these witnesses sign on as witnesses in the interim. So as to avoid disqualifying all kinds of commercial activity between the time of the initial testimony and the time that they're now being revealed as liars, Rava takes the stand that will disqualify them in practical terms from this point onwards, from the point of their being revealed as false. So, according to the first Lashon, the disqualification is from the current point in time of the revelation onwards, because it's a chiddush. The whole concept of Eid Zomein that we believe the second witness is novel. According to the second approach, the disqualification is, we'll say, a commercial consideration. My binayu, what is the difference in practical terms between the two versions of Rava? The Gemara answers, the ashidu bei tre lechad utre lechad. Imagine the following. We have testimony by, we'll call them the initial witnesses, and then two witnesses come and tell us that Mr. One of the first set is false, and two more witnesses come and tell us about Mr. Two of the initial set of testimony is false. So when you look at each one of the initial set of witnesses, their disqualification is through, in effect, four witnesses, two against one, and two more against the other. If you recall, in the first version of Rava, he described Eidim Zomimim as a Chiddush, namely two against two. Why would you believe the second over the first? Ah, but here, you don't have two against two. You have two against one. And then a second two against one. In a case like that, where we would be believing the second witnesses, that's not a function of a Chiddush, that's not something novel. Two can disqualify one. So there, you don't have a Chiddush element. So according to the first Lashon, there would be no reason not to disqualify retroactively. According to the second version, though, there would be reason to, in the course of the second Lashon, there still is a consideration not to disqualify them retroactively because of all of the interim commercial transactions that took place. They would be found to be illegitimate, and we don't want to rock the boat of commercial activity. So the Gemara, by the way, will spell this out in a moment. There's another point of difference. Inami, the Gemara continues, Inami, de paslinu begazlenusa, where the second witnesses tell us information about the first witnesses, but not in a zomeim fashion, where the second witnesses tell us about the first witnesses that you guys are thieves. So that we have a first set of witnesses that testified about a particular event. The second witnesses come in to disqualify them on the grounds of their being thieves. Thieves are not acceptable to offer testimony. The Gemara now explains. Lahach lishna di amris mishum chidush, according to version number one of Rava, that did not want to disqualify retroactively because Eidim Zomimim is a novelty. Leka, the Gemara says, in these examples that we are going with the second testimony, there's no element of Chiddush. Two against one, we believe the two. That's not a novel way, form of behavior in a judicial procedure. Likewise, an example of testimony concerning there being thieves. That's not, that we believe the second witnesses is not a function of our accepting them over the first witnesses. That is, as Rashi says, it's edus achrita. It's separate testimony. It's unrelated to the testimony of the first witnesses. If we look at the Rashi on the third line from the top, Begazlanusa, Shelohi Zimuhu, the second witnesses are not declaring first guy's false on the basis of Hazoma, that you were with us in another place. Elohi Idu Shnayim Aleilu, two witnesses come to tell us about the first fellows. Shane Gazlanim, these guys are thieves. V'ochalekula meimar smoch ahani. And here, there's no reason to even think about relying on the first guys. The hamilso achrito hi. This is separate, unrelated information vis-a-vis the nature of the subject of the testimony of the first fellows. so that in a case where the second witnesses tell us that the first guys are thieves, and we therefore disqualify them as witnesses, you're not dealing with the realm of chidush, and therefore even Rava would acknowledge you could disqualify retroactively. However, lahach lishna the amris mishum seder de lekuchos ika, but according to the explanation of Rava, why he says only mikanu labo from this point onwards, but not retroactively, that only from this point onwards would we reject them, but not reject their testimony retroactively. That, and in order to protect all kinds of commercial transactions that took place in the interim, so according to this version, mishum seida de lekuchos ika, there still is that consideration, and therefore Rava will say only from this point onwards will we view them as disqualified and not retroactively, so as not to upset all the transactions that took place in the interim. Omar Rav Yirmiyo Midifti Ovad Rav Papa Uvdo Kavose de Rava. That means that Rav Papa ruled in practical terms, where a case of witnesses that were discovered to be false in a zomim fashion, he ruled like Rava, meaning he preserved all kinds of transactions that took place between the that they were party to between their initial testimony and right now. Rav Papa ruled the transactions remain valid. Namely, only mikan ulahabo will we disqualify them. Rav Ashi Omar hilchiso kavase d'abaye. Rav Ashi said, no, he said, he disagrees, says, we shall rule like Abaye. And Abaye says, l'mafreya nifsal. Abaye did not hesitate to disqualify all testimony that they were party to retroactively from the time of their initial testimony where they actually lied. And we will rule like Abaye, which is unusual when he is up against Rava, but we will rule like Abaye in these six cases that are alluded to by this abbreviation, Ya'al Kigam. And what's important for us, simply just to note the Ayin, which is a reference to Aid, Ayin, the first word in the word Aid, Aid Zomein Lemafrehu Nifsal. The Gemara will be continuing its discussion concerning Eidim Zomimim and the Geneva Tvichu Mechira in the next Daf and the half from Daf Ayin Gimel, Daf Ayin Dalet. We will see much more about this. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.